This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumpert.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Baseball Press Pass podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jack Foster, here on this fine Wednesday afternoon, joined by Ryan Shumpert, as always, as well. Ryan, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. Glad to be back on, and certainly a lot to talk about after an exciting weekend for Tennessee baseball.
Probably the most exciting weekend, I'd have to say. Probably the most impressive weekend. Definitely the biggest series win of the season for Tennessee baseball, as they're coming off a series win over then third-ranked Kentucky, now fourth-ranked Kentucky, on the road, winning games 2 and 3 after dropping the opener. Ryan, do you share the sentiment that, you know, this is obviously the most impressive win, series win for Tennessee this season, and arguably, you know, the best they've looked at times?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely the most impressive. And you know, up there with the best they've looked to, but definitely the most impressive. And I think in a year where, to me at least, it feels like the middle of the SEC is a little bit down. Like, I think the top of the SEC is still probably just as good as it is most years, but the middle is a little bit down. And some of those teams in the middle, Vanderbilt and South Carolina, Tennessee still hasn't played. And then obviously they don't play Arkansas or A&M, are probably the two best teams in the league, or at least two of the best teams in the league. It felt like the first real, real tough test Tennessee had in the SEC schedule. Obviously, every SEC weekend's hard. Winning an SEC series is going to be challenging. But when you talk about a team in Tennessee to enter the weekend ranked number 4 in the country, I think it was kind of a big prove-it opportunity. And certainly the Vols did that on the road against a really good team, and on a weekend where not necessarily everything was really pretty and everything, you know, went their way. I think you kind of saw a lot of grit and ability to win some games and win a weekend series when they were kind of things, odds were stacked against them at times, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I mean, some of the usual suspects that have carried Tennessee up to this point of the season, Nate Snead being the one that comes to mind, you know, more than anyone else, and Drew Beam too, to a lesser extent, didn't have their best stuff this weekend. And that's, of course, on the pitching staff. But you look at Blake Burke, he hit sub 300 on the series as well. He wasn't mashing baseballs at a high rate like he's been all season. Arguably his worst series in SEC play so far was last weekend. So when you look at these guys that have, you know, been the heroes for Tennessee all season that, you know, weren't as great this weekend, Tennessee really needed contributions from a lot of people to be able to piece together this series win. But the one person that did not drop off, that has carried Tennessee so far this season and carried them, frankly, to a series win. Tennessee doesn't win the series if it's not for Christian Moore in Lexington, because he had a legacy game on Sunday, hitting 3 home runs, hit 600 on the series, was rightfully named SEC Player of the Week, D1 Baseball Player of the Week, Perfect Gameplay Player of the Week. Christian Moore was flat out incredible in Lexington. I mean, Christian Moore has been great for Tennessee for 3 years, and this is obviously the best season he's had even before this past weekend, but it was another level, Ryan, in Lexington for SEMO.
Yeah, I mean, you give Charlie Condon and Jack Caglione the nod over Christian Moore as a whole, but I mean, I think we've seen it, especially these last 2 years, he's been a full-time starter. You know, SEMO just has some of these weekends where he's just otherworldly, and it's just, you can't hardly get him out. We saw it, I think, what was in the Georgia series last year where Tennessee lost. We saw it certainly in the Charlotte or the Clemson regional, 2 of those games coming against Charlotte, when I think he hit more home runs than he recorded, or hit as many home runs as he recorded outs that weekend. And you saw it again against Kentucky, where he was just absolutely incredible, especially, you know, he goes 9 of 15. I think the Friday night game was probably just like a pretty average game. I don't have the specific stats right in front of me, but Saturday and Sunday.
It was a slow night for the entire offense on Friday, right? He went 1 of 4 on Friday.
Okay, yeah. So that tells you, I mean, he had 9 of 15 and he was 1 of 4 the first game of the series. He was just unbelievable in those final 2 games. And certainly in a shootout game 3 on Sunday, for him to hit 3 home runs, for him to have a double that helped spark that big 6th inning as Tennessee ended up taking the lead, but entered that inning, I believe, down 4 runs. He was the guy that propelled the offense. And, you know, I think it's impressive no matter how you slice it to ever hit three home runs in a game, no matter who you're facing on the mound for an SEC team. But, you know, first home run in the third inning gave Tennessee a 2-0 lead. You know, Mason Moore cruised for Kentucky through five innings. Tennessee had three base runners. I think that might have been the only hit, maybe one other hit. I know Cal Stark had worked a walk right before him, before he hit that two-run home run. So Tennessee hadn't gotten anything on Mason Moore, and Mason Moore was really good through those first five innings, and Christian Moore was one of the only guys that did anything, and to hit a two-run homer was super impressive and just a, you know, an incredible weekend for Moore, and like you said, a huge reason why Tennessee won.
Yeah, through five innings, Mason Moore had given up two hits and a walk, one being obviously the Semo two-run jack. And even when you take into account Semo's one hit on Friday, it was that RBI single that drove in Cal Stark. So, and that was huge at the time because it was a low-scoring game. You know, I believe that gave Tennessee a 3-1 lead at the time. Yes, it did. Obviously, Kentucky was able to win late because of, you know, Tennessee's defensive mistakes. But, you know, it was big in the moment. So Christian Moore just rose to the occasion every single time. And you mentioned against good pitchers on Sunday. I mean, that Johnny Hummel guy has been Kentucky's closer all year. Had a 0.96 ERA. I mean, he's been incredible all season long. And then he comes in and it's a close game. Kirby Cannell's running out of gas. Tennessee has the lead, but it's like, man, Tennessee really needs to keep accumulating runs here to make it feel comfortable. And that Semo three-run homer was just like, dude's on another planet at this moment. It's just unconscious is what he was.
No, no doubt. And, you know, I think that brings me into something you talked about a little bit ago and kind of something I alluded to at the very beginning, where I think probably the most impressive part of this weekend or Tennessee winning the series is just the fact that it didn't look great for him at so many times. And you start with the fact that they lost on Friday night and dug themselves a hole. And obviously that was largely of their own fault with some of the defensive miscues in that seventh inning. But, you know, a close game that I think, you know, could have gone either way, no matter what had happened in that situation. But Tennessee's two best pitchers for SEC play, Nate Snead, did not have it this weekend. Drew Beam, obviously, he hasn't just been phenomenal, and he wasn't terrible. He was able to grit himself into the middle innings, but it wasn't like the previous two weekends against LSU and Auburn when, you know, he was really on and he had his best stuff. So for those two guys to struggle in Tennessee to be able to get enough outs to win, I thought was really impressive. I think Aaron Combs deserves a lot of credit. Obviously, I think we'll probably talk a little bit more about him later. So I'll save more for him, but he obviously got a bunch of outs. And then, yeah, I mean, Kirby comes in what I guess was the bottom of the fifth inning on Sunday. Tennessee's down 6-2. There's multiple base runners on, and Kirby's the last guy in the pen. You know, I guess Stamos could have come back in, but of the guys that ever pitched for Tennessee, he was the one guy left.
The way I put it for that Kirby appearance is that he was the last guy who you could trust to throw strikes consistently. And that was key in that Kentucky game, especially late, because you can't be walking guys in that spot. So Kirby was probably the last guy who Tony and co could trust to just pound the strike zone. And no matter, I mean, what happened, obviously he gave up four home runs, but you know, that's kind of why I thought Tennessee lived and died with him there late on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, 100%. And it speaks to how good Tennessee's offense is that they can, you know, when they're on, which certainly they were on. And the reason Kentucky's bullpen was so depleted like that is because they got the Saturday starter out of the game and before he recorded it out. So Kentucky's whole bullpen had to be used in game two on Saturday. So they were down to some of either guys that had already pitched that weekend or guys that were, you know, were a little bit lower on the totem pole. And I think that's, you know, the benefit of a guy like Kirby who's going to throw strikes. You know, obviously things kind of got away from him a little bit in the ninth inning, but before the ninth inning, I mean, I think, you know, he got hit around a little bit, but it wasn't anything crazy, and it was just kind of the cost of doing business. You're going to throw strikes. You knew that was going to be a game the back half where there were going to be a lot of runs scored on either side. You just didn't want to hand the opponent anything free, and Kirby wasn't going to do that. Obviously, I think it got to maybe even his third time through the top of that Kentucky order by the ninth inning. And, he, you know, I think it was the right call to go give Marcus Phillips a chance, especially when the tying run came to the plate. But there's just value in a guy that's going to come in and throw strikes, even if he gets hit around a little bit, especially, you know, I think there's always value in that, but especially when you have an offense like Tennessee's that can really carry you. And in any given game. If you're just giving up a solo home run every two innings, you're going to be able to stay in it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at Kirby's line and, you know, it's not very good on the surface, but with what he was able to do for Tennessee, that was key. And that's what he's done all year. He's been one of the top relievers, certainly one of the most trustworthy relievers, and he'll continue to do so. And shout out to Kirby just for throwing as many pitches as he's done this season. I mean, this is a guy, obviously in 21, he was used a little more, 22 to a slightly lesser extent, 23 hardly at all. But now he's back to having these 50 to 70 pitch outings. And that is just something that Kirby hasn't done in quite some time. So there's no doubt he's given it his all up there. That's what I'll say about it.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's just he's a safety blanket of sorts, I think, for Frank and Tony. Because you just know what he is. And for the most part, obviously with any pitcher and with any player, there's going to be some variance in how, you know, their good outings compared to their bad outings. But it feels like that variance is smaller with Kirby. And you know what the most part you're going to get from him. And, you know, that was big. And they just needed somebody to come in there and eat up some outs. And that's what he did. And it was, you know, very important in Tennessee being able to pull out the win.
You mentioned Aaron Combs a little bit earlier. We need to talk more about him because outside of Christian Moore, he was arguably Tennessee's, you know, second MVP for the weekend. Comes in Saturday. Drew Beam was mediocre is the word I'd give. He was not terrible, as you said, but not obviously great. Aaron Combs comes in when Tennessee has the lead and shuts Kentucky down for 4 2/3. Got the win on the day. 3 hits allowed, 0 runs through 43 strikes on 62 total pitches. That is now 3 straight weekends where Aaron Combs has been one of Tennessee's best pitchers. In the last two, he was a big reason why Tennessee was able to get the win on a Saturday. So you wrote about it late Saturday night. I want you to expand a little bit more on it here, but Aaron Combs being this good really changes Tennessee's ceiling this season. Considering the A.J. Russell injury, now they have a guy who is so dependable who can go 4 2/3 like he did and really just be dominant.
No doubt. And, you know, Tennessee, it feels like they've had started to piece some things together with the bullpen and have some guys that are pretty reliable, kind of in the Kirby mold. Maybe not quite that dramatic, but, you know, they're going to be solid. For the most part, you maybe know what you're going to get. But Combs is one who raises the ceiling and can really be dominant and when he's at his best. And I mean, that's what he was at 4 2/3 innings. That's a career high 7 strikeouts, allowed just 3 base runners. He was just really, really good. And any sort of really, really good arm is big for Tennessee at this point, as they have the lineup that's going to be able to produce runs and potentially make a deep run. They just need to find pitching and they need to find arms that they can really trust. And particularly now, as they've started to find some more guys they can trust, some high talent, I think Combs is that. And I think you're starting to see Combs be the guy that Tennessee expected a little bit before the season. And I think that's, again, you just can't really undersell what that means for Tennessee to have a second arm currently, like Nate Snead in the bullpen, where you feel like he's capable of going 3 to 4 to 5 innings and being really, really good. I think that just does a ton for Tennessee and helps shore up a lot of the questions that you could have about him. And just kind of looking at the tell of two halves at this point for his season, if I can find it here in my story. I'll throw it over to you, and maybe I can find it here in a second. But his stats from his first 7 appearances to his last 3 are radically different.
No, I believe it. I mean, he was struggling with his command for a large part of the first half of the season, and now, as I said, he's just been lights freaking out. And I think, and this is obviously the case with a lot of pitchers, but I think Aaron Combs, Ryan, is a guy who, when he's on, he's really on, and then when he doesn't have it, it's maybe there's not a great chance of it really bouncing back. Like Drew Beam is a guy to where if he doesn't have it, he can still kind of maneuver his way through his outing and still be okay. That's what makes him so valuable. And maybe Nate Snead is also in the Aaron Combs camp of when they have it, they're really good, but when they're not, it's not going to be that great. So do you think Aaron Combs may be along those lines?
Yeah, I think to a degree, definitely what we've seen this year, because when he's struggled, it's largely been his command, and he's just walked a ton of guys, and it allows it to get away from him a little bit. I would say Snead somewhere in the middle. I mean, certainly this weekend would maybe point to him being more in that Combs. When he doesn't have it, he doesn't have it. But I also can think of a handful of outings when he just hasn't been dominant, but he's been, you know, able to get through a large portion of the game. I mean, I think about Alabama that Sunday, and obviously he gives up the long home run, but I think that was more of him just being left in the game a little too long. The start of that outing, he wasn't great, and he gave up some runs, but he kind of found his footing. That felt like a very Drew Beam-esque outing. So I'd say Snead's a little bit of both. Going back to those numbers with Combs, I was able to find those. He's had 10 appearances this year. His first 10 out, or excuse me, first 7 outings, allowed 8 runs and walked 9 batters in 11.1 innings. And then now in these last 3, starting at Auburn, and then going into the LSU series and the Kentucky series, he is allowed just 1 run, 6 hits, 3 walks, struck out 17 batters in 10.2 innings pitched. So almost as many innings pitched in these last 3. He's given up 7 less runs, a lot less walks, and the strikeouts have been way up. Is that breaking ball has been really good, and he's really been able to locate the fastball a lot better, I think, to keep batters off balance.
Obviously, Marcus Phillips got the final out on Sunday. It was a big out. As Ryan mentioned, the tying run was at the plate. And Marcus Phillips, that, I believe that was his first SEC action on the season.
Yep.
When I was talking about a guy, you know, Kirby, who was the last one Tennessee could trust in that spot to throw strikes and just gut through the rest of the game, I think Tennessee would like it if they could go to another guy where, if Snead doesn't have it, if Kazi Combs are obviously spent from the 2 nights prior, Stamos maybe 2. Do you think Marcus Phillips is that next guy that maybe could see an expanded role in SEC play moving forward? I know we've seen Binky kind of work his way into the mix. It was arguably the worst outing he's had all season on Sunday. So do you think Marcus Phillips can be a guy who can get more innings for Tennessee moving forward in those late game spots?
Yeah, I think potentially. I mean, it's Tony talks about it all the time with, you know, first and first being a big thing. And for him to do well in that first outing is big. And I would imagine we'll earn him another opportunity at least at some point. But why I think the answer to that question is yes, is just because the ceiling's so high. And it goes back to what I was just talking about a minute ago. It feels like Tennessee's found some good, reliable duct tape with a lot of things in the bullpen, guys that you can count that, you know, things might not go horribly for, but they don't have it still feels like they're lacking that high-end punch with AJ Russell out. It feels like they're lacking that.
That's who he
punch.
Would be. Yeah,
and that's what, right? Marcus Phillips can be with the high velo, with the really, really good stuff. So do I see him, you know, turning into a guy like Snead or Combs that they maybe trust for multiple innings? Probably not. But could he be, which I think is what you're getting at, a guy that you give the 8th or the 9th inning in a tight game? I think maybe so. And you kind of simplify what you're asking of him, and then leaning on that, all the talent that he has, I could certainly see that being something that works for Tennessee.
Yeah, I agree. As you said, with the velo and the upsides there, and, you know, he's kind of had a unorthodox season. He's dealt with some soreness here and there, had to exit a game early a couple of times. Obviously, the opportunities have been limited, but that out Sunday has to be huge for his confidence and for the coaching staff to, you know, trust him moving forward. So we'll see if he can be used in more of those late game spots, as that's the role he would fill. As far as the starting rotation goes, we saw the same thing as we did in the LSU series, with Stamos being an opener, giving way to Kazi. It's just a much quicker hook this time around, as he allowed a couple of base runners and only recorded 1 out. And, you know, I actually liked the move. I was surprised, because that's not something we see Tony do a lot. It is just pull a pitcher immediately like that, or have a really quick hook. But I thought it was the right move, and it worked out, as, you know, Kazi didn't allow a run to come across there in the first, and then was really solid until he ran into a bit of trouble. Line looks a lot worse than what Kazi pitched Friday against Kentucky. But do you think that the Stamos Kazi combo, the Seacrest Snead combo they've been using on Sundays, is this the plan that Tennessee should have moving forward until, you know, something just really goes awry and they are forced to change it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the hard part about it, is that it's worked. I mean, my natural instinct is to say, you know, cut the middleman, or cut the opener, really, more than the middleman, on Friday and just go back to Causey in a starting spot. But, you know, baseball is such a game of rhythms and routines that maybe you don't want to do that because Causey, things have gone well for him. It just feels like if you're – and I don't get me wrong, I completely agree that pulling Stamos was the right move. I mean, even the out he got was very hard hit. He didn't have it.
Yeah.
But it's like if you're going to him 8 pitches in the game, like, just start him. That's kind of how I generally feel about it. I think you're going to keep Xander on Sunday. I think the fact that Xander's been able to go deeper in games will lead to what we've seen the last couple of weeks, that they're not just going to leave Snead as the guy to follow him. They're going to use Snead aggressively early in the week, and you know, and they have some more flexibility with Combs pitching well too. So I continue to go back to what we talked about last week, especially if you think AJ Russell's going to be back. I like the idea of putting Nate Snead into a starting spot. I'm continuing to come around on that more and more, especially as we see Combs be better and better and seem like a guy who could feel what Snead's done for out of the bullpen for Tennessee a lot of this year. And then maybe even, you know, Phillips. If Phillips continues to progress, you figure that out more. I just feel like you're playing with – it goes back to what I said.
That's a lot more pressure on Xander being good to me if Snead is going to start. Obviously, that's –
Yeah, no, it does. It does, but at the same time, it's like if you do that, then you're not starting Causey, and then you have Causey and Combs as two guys that you can trust out of the bullpen and can go in longer outings. And I think if you feel confident in putting Causey back into the starting lineup, it's probably less of a need to put Snead in there. But I just think if you're going to be rolling with two openers in three games, like, not that you can't do it. It's just, I don't know. It feels like you're walking on a tightrope a little bit to me, and you need to go with somebody you trust a little more. And Causey stuff plays good out of the bullpen. It doesn't mean you can't start him. It doesn't mean you can't play in that role. And as I ramble here, the thought, and I kind of have beat around the bush a little bit on this topic. I think the Combs development and his emergence, it starts changing my outlook a little bit more on what this team could do. It's making me say, all right, I think this team can have higher aspirations. And when I start looking at making a deep run, you know, potentially not just making it to Omaha, but getting to Omaha and making a deep run, the biggest question I have for this Tennessee team is that it doesn't feel like they have an elite starter. And that doesn't mean Nate Snead's going to be that if you put him into that. I just think that he has a higher ceiling besides AJ Russell, which I continue to think if even if AJ Russell comes back, to me it seems unlikely that you're going to be able to fully get him worked back into a starter's role, a starter throwing more than 70 pitches in an outings role. It feels like Snead's that next highest ceiling guy, and that makes me intrigued by the possibility of seeing him as a starter and seeing what Tennessee can do with him. And I think that just would give Tennessee a weapon that they might need, or at least will be beneficial for them if they were to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
It's a good point. I can't argue with it. It makes a lot of sense for Nate Snead to just kind of become that next AJ Russell. And, you know, you not limp to the finish line, obviously, but you get through the rest of the regular season without AJ. And if he's back in the postseason, then he's the Nate Snead. He's the guy who throws 50 to 60 pitch relief outings and is blowing people away. So I think I agree.
Yeah, or even Causey's that guy. And if Russell, it doesn't have to be Russell fully replacing Snead, but Russell could become the Marcus Phillips role that we're talking about, where you just feel great about him to put him in for the ninth inning to shut a game down, or the eighth and ninth inning. I think you have some flexibility there. If you're going to keep Xander as a Sunday guy still, you have some flexibility of being able to use Causey and Combs in similar roles that you've used Snead, just putting a little bit less pressure on them because you do have two guys that you can rely on.
Yeah, and the word you used, elite starter, I mean, sure, Causey has been that at times this season, but with what he showed for 2 weeks, it's hard to really say he can be the guy, the feared guy on a certain night in Omaha where it's like, oh my gosh, this guy's about to freaking shove. Like Chase Dolander could be, or like Chase Burns would be out of the pen, or like Paul Skeens, obviously, on a much higher extent. But Nate Snead, I think, could be along those lines. So I think I agree with you.
And yeah, and it's you feel a lot better about Causey after the last 2 weeks. Like, you feel if you need him to start, if you want to put him back to start, also, you feel good about that.
Yeah, he also does feel a little bit more bullpen to me than Sneed. So
it doesn't feel like Causey's a guy that's going to go out and give you seven innings of one or two earned runs. And like you said, it's going to be feared. And maybe I'm a little bit skewed by Tennessee's experiences in Omaha, because they're two times in Omaha under Tony. They get there in 21 and they got to face Andrew Abbott, who's just a stud for Virginia, and he's a stud in the big leagues for the Reds now. And then they get back there last year and they got to face Paul Skeens, who's the best pitcher in college baseball in a long time. So they've obviously gotten bad luck, and I'm a little skewed by the pitchers they've had to face in that first game. But it, when I start thinking about Omaha, and I start thinking, how does Tennessee break through the door and make a little bit deeper run in Omaha and give themselves a real chance to be one of the final two teams remaining? I think of they've run into starting pitchers that have just been elite that they haven't really been able to match the last two times they've been there. And while I don't think they necessarily have anybody that's going to be like Andrew Abbott or Paul Skeens, certainly, I think they, Sneed's the guy that has that higher ceiling, given that I don't think Russell's going to be back in a role where he's going to be that guy this season.
Well, we don't know what Tony's going to do this weekend against Missouri. Honestly, I would be surprised if he changes it up, but if there's a weekend to do it, I say it's this one. At home, you got two tough road series coming up in Vandy and Florida. You know, if it's in his mind at all, I say pull the trigger this weekend on Friday against Missouri and start Nate Sneed. See what happens. I mean, I don't think there's a really low floor with the move for this weekend is what I'm saying. I mean, why not, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. This is going to be the easiest series probably that they, on paper, they'll have all of SEC playing for baseball. You never know how it'll play out. And I don't even know that it works out in a way that you can't do it. I do wonder if it being a Thursday through Saturday series maybe makes it a little bit harder to do. I don't know that, but just, an out loud wondering, I guess, too. But to your point, yeah. I didn't get the vibe that they're going to make some radical change this weekend.
I guess I kept saying Friday night. It is a Thursday through Saturday series, the first time this season. So got to get used to that, as it'll be Thursday night. First round of the NFL draft, also the Tennessee-Missouri opener.
Three of the last four series are that way for Tennessee. And it feels like they always, NFL draft week.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like they always play on Thursday. The only time I can think of that they didn't was, I guess, 2 years ago. I know when the Titans traded A.J. Brown, I wasn't at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, because I can remember that moment vividly. But every other year, like the last that I've been covering the team, it feels like it's always they always play on that Thursday night of the draft.
You're right. 2 years ago it wasn't, but definitely last year it was. So Thursday night opener for Tennessee and Missouri. We've gone 28 minutes and mostly just talked about the pitching staff. We mentioned Christian Moore, but let's talk about Tennessee's offensive players over the weekend and just how things are stacking up. There's not a lot of takeaways. I mentioned Blake Burke was, not as great as he's been, but he's still Blake Burke. Christian Moore was the MVP. Dean Curley had a really solid weekend, hitting over 300. He was Mr. Consistent for Tennessee. It's been a while since he's had a homer. I think that's honestly, it's almost kind of good, because I think the narrative for Dean Curley early on was he's homer or bust. He was hitting home runs at such a wild rate, but that was kind of the only thing he was doing. Now he's actually shown the capability to, be a consistent hitter and, be a solid option for Tennessee in the back half of that lineup.
Yeah, no doubt. It feels like he's been stuck on 9 home runs for a while. He's been knocking on that door of double digits. And yeah, it was a really nice weekend for him. I thought it was, not that it was surprising. I expected Kavars Tears to bounce back, but for him to bounce back after really his first bad weekend of the year against LSU was a good sign. He was probably Tennessee's second best hitter behind Christian Moore, hit two home runs. I mean, the home run that he hit to take the lead, I guess what would have been in the seventh inning on Sunday. One of the best at bats I think we'll see all season for any Tennessee player. I mean, he falls behind 0-2. I think he fouls off three straight two strike pitches. Then he watches three balls. And then on what was, I guess, the ninth pitch of the at bat, he just line dry, just ropes the ball. I feel like Dreiling's home run on Saturday was kind of this way too, where you knew he hit it hard enough to be a home run. It was just, will it stay high enough? It was hit so low to carry over that right field wall, and it did. in a big two-run home run. So he was great. You said it, Curley. I thought weekend was really encouraging. Dreiling was good as he typically is at the plate. And, you know, it just says so much about Blake Burke for him to go 4-14, hit .286, have a home run in the series and be like, yeah, not a very good weekend. Not a very good weekend for Blake.
I mean, as great as he's been, it was the first time we've really seen Blake not be just out of this world, right? So
yeah, exactly. He has set the standard of being out of this world. So when he's just like pretty good, it's like, yeah, not a very good weekend. So you're right. I'd almost be curious to go through and look at all the series last year and see how many times he had four hits in an SEC series last year, because it doesn't feel like it was too many. So just another sign of how good he's been, and his defense was awesome this weekend too. We've talked about how much better it was going to be. We talked about going into the weekend how Tennessee's defense as a whole was going to be tested a lot this weekend. I think there was some good, there was some bad, but the biggest good was how good Blake Burke was. I mean, he was just awesome defensively.
I'm trying to remember when he cut the runner off, when it was, but on the bunt,
on Sunday. Because it was when things went wrong for Tennessee. It was like the one out Binky got. Binky came on with a guy on, so he hit the first batter. There were runners on first and second, no one out. It was that next guy. And I think they went to Binky hit another guy after that, and then they went to Snead.
You're right. But yeah. Fourth inning, yes.
Fourth inning.
That was one of the best defensive plays you'll see, like from Tennessee, probably this. I mean, that was just so perfect. He timed it perfectly. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and it was such a good bunt. I mean, that was the only play, was at third. He wasn't getting the guy back at first with Simo covering on that. So that was a great play. The double play, I think Tennessee turned, I think it would have been in Saturday's game. I think maybe the first batter Binky faced when Billy came up, and I think it was around the same situation, or on first and second, or maybe bases loaded, and Billy Amick gets the, you know, touches third base and throws it over. Just a great, does the splits on the stretch. Another great play by Blake. I mean, I'd say that was the thing where he was good enough offensively. You know, it wasn't up to his standards that he set this year, but he was good enough offensively. And you combine that with how good he was defensively, it still felt like Blake had a really good weekend, just because of how important some of those defensive plays really were.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think he's become Tennessee's best infielder, which is, you know, kind of wild to think about, but I think it's true. I mean, Billy Amick had some good plays early, but he's had some bad plays as of late. Simo is fine, but I don't think he's great at second base. And, you know, Dean Curley is solid. He can make a case for it. But I do think Blake Burke has become Tennessee's best infielder. He's come a long way defensively, is what I'm trying to say. And the bounce back offensively he's had this season, he's just such a complete player. And it'll be interesting to see where he gets drafted this summer. But, you know, some other guys, Billy struggled at the plate. But then he follows it up with a two-homer day in the midweek, so I think Billy's fine. But there was a group of players I wanted to touch on. It was the guys, you know, hitting towards the bottom of Tennessee's lineup. They didn't get a lot of contribution, Tennessee didn't, from the bottom of their lineup in the Kentucky series, as Hunter Ensley, Reese Chapman, and Dalton Bargo all went 2 of 24 combined at the plate. Obviously, Bargo only started one game, Ensley and Chapman, 3 for Ensley, 2 for Chapman. Cal Stark also, by the way, went 1 of 8, but it's Cal Stark. I think when you have a hit by pitch as he did, that sparked some offense, a walk one time that sparked a little bit of offense. You kind of know what you're getting with Cal Stark. So I wanted to focus on these three outfielders for Tennessee. I think this kind of opens the door for a guy like Colby Backus, who we saw play center field late in Sunday's game, made a couple of nice catches, gets the start on the midweek in the midweek game against Western Carolina, has a homer. He's been solid this season, and I think that it's a little bit muddier waters in terms of, you know, who could get consistent opportunities in that third outfield spot and at the DH spot moving forward.
No, you're right. It is, and it's definitely been a little, like, that spot's just a little bit more streaky, the guys there, whether it's Bargo, whether it's Chapman, whether it's Robin Villeneuve, who we really haven't seen in a big role in some time. And I think that's probably, when you talk about Tennessee's lineup, that's the question. Can they get 1-9 consistency? Because that 1-5 is just truly insane. I mean, all five of those guys might be top 100 picks in the draft this year. So I don't really know what they do. I mean, it was another tough weekend for Inslee at the plate. I'm kind of, I don't know if skeptical is the right word, because I'm not sure I necessarily say I'd be surprised if they make a move, but it still doesn't feel like Tony's shown a whole lot of signs of giving someone else an opportunity there.
I guess what I'm more focusing on is the DH spot, because I'm with you. I think you take your lumps with Hunter Inslee, and he had a 2-run homer on Friday. I mean, it was the reason it was close there for a while, so he came up big in that moment, and he does that occasionally. He hits 280. I think that's what Hunter Inslee is, right? So he is what he is, and he's obviously a great locker room guy. He's a great leader. So my question or my talking point I wanted to bring up was more so about that DH spot. And, you know, last week we had talked about how Bargo and Chapman were just going to rotate. I do think maybe there's some more guys who could get opportunities there.
Yeah, no, I think there is. And I think it's kind of like a balanced situation. Because you're right, Backus has been really good in the opportunities he's been given. And he hasn't had any SEC, at least SEC. He's played some defense, I think, and maybe pinch ran an SEC play, but he hasn't had any at bats. One at bat, is that right?
One, yeah, blowout in Auburn. Right.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, it feels like he could certainly see an opportunity, maybe get a start. I think it may probably be a pinch hit first, given that he even just made his first start in the midweek this week. But it's, you know, he's thrown his hat into that conversation as a guy that potentially could. And, you know, I don't think Bargo has a hit the last 2 weeks. Obviously, I think he's only started 3 games, and he did have a couple at bats when he came in to play defensively on Sunday, or maybe just one at bat, and he didn't get on base. So it's kind of like a mix with him of like trying to see, let him maybe hit through it, because he is, I think, the most talented hitter of that group. And then with Chapman, it's like he's only gotten, he hasn't gotten a ton of opportunities. Like Bargo hitting the SEC all last year at Missouri. So there's a degree of it with Chapman of, do you let him just like get more experience? Cause in theory, he's going to get better with more at bats. So yeah, I think you're right. I think there's going to be some rotation there. They're going to try to find the hot hand and try to ride the hot hand. It'll just be interesting to see how much do they expand that. And you know, what does that look like? Do they throw Colby or Robin back into the mix as with a start, or do they just try to get him some pinch hit opportunities? I don't really know. It doesn't feel like there's a definitive answer right now, but it feels like there's going to be pretty consistent tinkering at that spot for Tennessee.
Yeah, I agree. And as you mentioned, Robin, we haven't seen in a while. It does feel like he's kind of been behind that group of Bargo and Chapman. But you know, that gives us something to talk about here, right? It gives us an uncertain DH spot, at least gives us a talking point each podcast. This series against Missouri, as I mentioned, it's a Thursday through Saturday series for Tennessee. First pitch on Thursday night is 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Friday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. So back-to-back, Friday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. So back-to-back night games. And then the finale on Saturday is at noon Eastern. Ryan, what's your prediction for this series? I feel like I know the answer, but what's your prediction for Tennessee and Missouri?
I think the Vols get the sweep. That's my prediction.
There you have it. And we will have coverage for you guys all weekend long on RockyTopInsider.com. You can also hit us up on social at RockyTopInsider. Ryan is at RShump00. That's S-C-H-U-M-P. I'm at Jack Foster Media. Before we go, Ryan, what's the Titans going to do on Thursday night at Pick 7? What's going
to
happen?
I was listening to my guy, Easton Freeze, who covers the Titans for Broadway Sports on the morning show on Fox Sports this morning with Bob Baskerville and John Reed. And he's a big fan of thinking they trade down. Hopefully, you know, some quarterbacks are still there at 7 and some of those quarterback hungry teams that are drafting like 11 to 15. 11 to 15, you know, get a little hungry and want to move up, because the Titans don't have a whole lot of draft capital. They don't have a third round pick. Some of those middle rounds are a little bit lacking. So I'm no expert I'm no expert scouter, period. I'm certainly no expert offensive tackle scouter, but it feels like people view that top five, top six guys as being really deep. So maybe trade down a couple of spots. You miss out on Joe Alt. You get a handful of guys, or, you know, one of those handful of guys and pick up some mid-round capital as the Titans try to add talent. But I'd also be really happy if they just took Joe Alt at 7. So either of those two things. Offensive tackle, though, is what I want.
Yeah, I think the debate is if Alt is gone, trade down or take Odunze. Like, because I think Odunze is such a good prospect. I expect MHJ and Neighbors to be gone by 7. So if Alt goes to LAC at 5, then do you trade down or do you take Odunze? I think Vikings will be chomping at the bit to get in the top 10. So Tennessee would be able to trade down in that scenario. But it'll be interesting. I do think they get Joel in the end, though. I think.
Yeah, I don't. Don't draft Odunze. He's good. But, like, to me, you've addressed the receiver issue a good bit this offseason, and you've done nothing to address the offensive tackle issue.
Okay, I understand. Right. I totally get you, and I'm probably agree with you. But address the receiver issue. You have two aging receivers. I think Hopkins may be better than Ridley, and Traylon's a bust. So,
well, first of all, Calvin Ridley, you say he's aging. He's basically 25. Come on, he's basically 25.
He's like 29.
Have you not seen this quote from him?
Did you miss that quote?
He said in his introductory press conference that he's basically 20, or his Titans press conference that he's basically 25, because of the lack of wear and tear on the body. Which, I mean, he had the injury and he had the suspension. So that's the two. That gets him to 27. I'm still searching for the 2 years to get him to 25, but I'm riding with him. Basically 25. And if Neighbors or Marvin Harrison are there, then I'm like fine.
Well, yeah,
you're right. I'm okay. Fine, but I don't know. Rome's good, I know, but I just don't view him quite on their caliber. So I'd rather just get an offensive tackle.
That's fair. Well, it'll be a fun weekend regardless. NFL draft, Tennessee baseball series. Let's have a weekend. It's gonna be fun over there in Lindsey Nelson Stadium. As I mentioned, that's Ryan. I'm Jack. We'll see you guys next time. We'll be right back.